This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we conclude 1 Thessalonians with at peace, the will of God, benediction, and closing. Then we move into 2 Thessalonians with greeting and thanksgiving and judgment at Christ's appearing. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
Fitness, fellowship, and faith. The fact that you could put those things together and not have Donald Trump by the third paragraph is kind of a miracle, a small miracle of journalism in this day and age.
They just simply get angry and they'll shut anybody out of their lives who keeps being that voice of conscience to them, because that's what they're trying to silence. They can't silence their own conscience, so they're going to try to silence yours.
He forgave sin, and the people at that time said, who can forgive sin but God only? And Jesus didn't say, sorry, I didn't really mean that. Jesus accepted that.
So we need to be hopeful, knowing that our hope is laid up in Christ, and knowing that that is the motive for our actions. It doesn't mean that we think naively, we're going to survive this. But that's not the point. The point is for us to be faithful and leave a foundation for the kingdom.
Greek professors in Wisconsin listen to Issues Etc. while teaching verb paradigms. Paidoio, paidoies, paidoie, paidoiomen, paidoiete, paidoies.
You can learn a lot about church life among Lutherans by just asking the right questions. What do Lutherans believe about church music? And if you sit down and analyze the future demographics based upon what we have so far by way of decline, does the worship style of a congregation appear to have any effect on future decline, not only of that congregation, but of the denomination as a greater whole? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to continue a conversation with Lyman Stone on a new survey of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members. We'll spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker teaching a Sunday school lesson on Jeremiah. And then we will talk about storytelling, screen time, and today's youth. They don't trust anyone older than they are. Katie Schuerman will be our guest, author of a recent column for The Federalist, titled Watching Phones Instead of Reading Good Books is Starving Kids' Souls. Yesterday, we began an interview with Lyman Stone on a new survey of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members. Lyman is a PhD candidate in population dynamics at McGill University, director of research for demographic intelligence, adjunct fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, a research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, and author of What is Our Life Together? Report on the results of the Lutheran Religious Life Survey. We were discussing many things, why it's so hard to gather information on members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It's a pretty small denomination compared to the U.S. population. And how do the two groups in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, generally speaking, the confessional group and the missional group, agree and disagree? Let's pick up where we left off with Lyman Stone's answer to my question. What do Lutherans believe about church music?
So here, I was asking a little bit less about beliefs and more about practices, just because I was curious. When someone says their service is contemporary, what does that mean? And here we got the biggest divides of the entire survey. Nothing was more divided than music in this survey. So for example, if we look at the share of people who said that there's organ music in their church, it was 95% of traditional services. And it was 25% of contemporary. If we look at the presence of guitars, it was 15% of contemporary and 95%, or sorry, it was 15% of traditional and 95% of contemporary. These are massive gaps. And you see similar things for like drums or having a worship leader, a music leader up front. That's really kind of a social form, right? This isn't about an instrument. It's about having one amplified music leader up front singing. That was split 10% to 85%. We also asked about, you know, let's say you're singing a song, how do people know what to sing? For Lutherans at traditional services, about 60% said they know what to sing by reading it from a hymnal. And about another 20% said by reading from a printed bulletin. And then the remaining 15% said reading from a PowerPoint slide or TV. But when you go to the contemporary services, only about 2% said that they would read from a hymnal. Only about 3 or 4% said that they would use a printed bulletin. And about 90% said that there would be a PowerPoint slide or TV. These are massive differences. And they speak to a difference that we kind of that I kind of spotted across many parts of this survey, which is that confessional or traditional Lutherans tend to have, and I want to be clear, I'm not saying this is like a pejorative to either side, but they tend to have people who self-identified as confessional or traditional tended to have a more communitarian outlook on how church is done and on actually quite a few questions. We also asked questions about their actual attitudes towards various kinds of community. And across the board, we just reliably found that confessional or traditional Lutherans tended to think that church should be a primary community with lots of things done together. You know, we should read together. We shouldn't have a song leader up front leading us. We should all be singing together. We want to hear ourselves. We want to hear our own and our neighbor's voices, right? We should resolve our disputes before we go to communion because it's something we do together. So you get framed, I guess, positively. You could say communitarian. Framed in another light, you could say that quote-unquote confessional or traditional Lutherans had a somewhat more collectivist view of church and family, whereas contemporary or missional LCMS members tended to be somewhat more individualistic in some regards. Although I should mention, there was a big difference somewhere else where missional or contemporary Lutherans were much more likely to say they placed a much higher priority on the community of their nuclear family. So the big difference wasn't just individualism. It's that confessional or traditional Lutherans placed a huge emphasis on the church as a community, and missional or contemporary Lutherans tended to be more individualistic about church and more communitarian about their immediate kin group and also their friends and social ties.
How involved are Lutherans in the life of their congregations?
This is one where I kind of gave the results. I started sharing the results with some people, and immediately all the pastors who heard the results said, there's no way that's correct. People are totally feeding you a line, because something like 50% of confessional or traditional Lutherans said that they attend Bible class or study before or after the service. Whereas for contemporary, it was about 25%. For missional, it was about 40%. About 30% of most groups said that they go to a fellowship time, a meal, or coffee hour before or after the service. I found it shocking that coffee hour had lower reported attendance than Bible class or Bible study, partly because that's just not my experience. I feel like there's a lot more people at coffee hour than Bible study, but also just, it's just very surprising to me. Overall, we don't have a lot of benchmarks for this. I wasn't able to find another survey of like another denomination that asked about these things. So it's difficult to say exactly how involved it is in comparative terms, but it seems like within those who are at church, you probably have, you know, 25 to 40% who are doing something else as well on a Sunday morning.
How do LCMS members view synod?
That's a great question. So we had, I had a few questions about their views of the synod, where basically we asked if they had a lot of respect for leadership of the denomination. They thought that money sent to the denomination was used wisely. If they thought there should be more pooling of resources, and then if they thought local congregations usually know best. What I found is more confessional or traditional Lutherans had more positive views of the leadership of the denomination. I don't think that's surprising to anyone. Though again, we're not talking about necessarily massive differences. The share who said they had a lot of respect for leadership of the denomination was 60% for confessional Lutherans and 50% for missional. So if you think of that as like an approval rating on Matt Harrison, I guess he's above water in both of those groups. Then if you think about, do they think money sent to the denomination is used wisely? Well, if you look at like traditional Lutherans, it's about 50% who say yes. If you look at contemporary Lutherans, it's about 30%. And it's a similar split by like confessional or missional. So people respect the leadership of the denomination, but they're somewhat less trusting of the use of funds. If we turn to the idea that there should be more pooling of resources, confessional or traditional Lutherans were somewhat more likely to say, yeah, churches should pool resources more. again, that goes to that sense of communitarianness, right? That this tends to be a slightly more collectivist crowd. Then the question of, I think each local congregation usually knows how best to use its resources. Agreement with that was more common among contemporary or missional Lutherans. Again, as you would expect. Now, what we don't know is, would this all change if the current president of the LCMS was somebody else? You know, it's possible that these things all really just reflect current leadership in one way or another. I can't really test that. But at least as of now, that's what we see.
Where do LCMS members find community?
So this is what I was getting at above about family. If you look at traditional Lutherans, about 70% say that they are proud of their family. Whereas among contemporary Lutherans, it's about 95%. That is a large difference. On the other hand, if you say, are you proud of being Lutheran? For traditional Lutherans, about 65% say yes. For contemporary Lutherans, it's only about 45%. That's a big difference. Likewise, there are some differences in odds of saying you're proud of your church, with confessional or traditional being somewhat prouder of their church. And also on if you're proud of your group of friends, with contemporary or missional Lutherans being more proud of their group of friends. So this points to differences in sources of community. Confessional or traditional Lutherans tend to see church and Lutheranism as sources of identity and primary communities. This is your community. This is who you're proud of, you spend time with, you affiliate with. Whereas contemporary or missional Lutherans are more likely to say, no, my primary community isn't my church, it's my family and also my friends. And, you know, I want to be clear, it's all too easy to say, well, you know, one side of this is right because you should prioritize your family most, or the other side is right because you should prioritize your church most. But I think it's worth recognizing that there are a lot of good competing priorities here. A group where 95% say they're proud of their family and also about half say they're proud of being Lutheran, that's not a group that is bad. Likewise, a group where 75% are proud of their family and 65% are proud of being Lutheran, that's not a bad group. So I want to emphasize that even where there are differences, it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, one group here is the good guy and the other one's the bad guy.
Where would LCMS members go to church if not at an LCMS congregation?
This question I got lots of frustrated emails with. There was a lot of unhappiness with this because I gave people options on saying, if there was no LCMS church in the area where you lived, where would you go to church instead? And a lot of people said, you should have given the option, I would move away. And it's like, well, that would defeat the point of the question, right? But so what I found is that the vast majority say that they would go to some other Protestant church. And I had options like evangelical or mainline or whatever. But for the most part, people said they'd just go to some other Protestant church. A few said they would stop attending in general, about 10%. And that view that if there weren't an LCMS church, I would just stop attending was somewhat more common among traditional LCMS members than contemporary. There were some who said if they weren't LCMS, they would go to a Roman Catholic or an Orthodox church. That view was much more common among confessional or traditional Lutherans. To the extent that there's sort of a Wittenberg to the Bosporus pipeline or a Wittenberg to the Tiber pipeline, it's evidently on the confessional side here. Whereas on the other side, there were definitely a larger share saying that if they weren't at an LCMS church, they would go to, you know, just some evangelical church. That was a more common view among missional or contemporary Lutherans.
With all the caveats in place, what can you project about the future of the LCMS demographically if we adopt what you call a business as usual model? Just we can all, sure, all sides continue doing what they're doing.
So separate to the survey, I did put together this demographic projection where I collected church statistics going back to 1833 to the extent that they were available. And then I essentially specified a demographic model of the LCMS using the best available survey data of demographics and fertility and migration and mortality and all these things. Because there's a debate in our church about why are we declining and what can be done. And I don't want to sound like church growthy here, like, oh, if we just do this, then the Spirit will move and there will be growth. No, I think we have to be realistic that sometimes the Spirit is moving in a place and is calling people to repentance, and you're in a society of hard hearts and no one is listening because they are rejecting the gospel and they don't believe. And so I don't think church growth is an evidence of faithfulness or anything like that. At the same time, I think most of us would like to be in a church that's thriving, prosperous, healthy, where we can recruit pastors, train them, and all these things. So numeric stability, it's not a measure of faithfulness, but I think for all of us, we'd like to see it. So what I find is that if current rates of fertility, adult conversion, and youth retention remain the same, then by 2070, which is the last point in my forecast, which I chose because I'll be dead by then, most likely. So I wanted to forecast basically out to the end of my life expectancy because then I'll be dead and I'll be in heaven. So, or I'll be on my way. By 2070, there will be about 400,000 members of the LCMS if current trends continue. That is approximately where we were in 1890. We will be back in our 19th century membership sizes in 2070 if current trends continue. Now, you might wonder, well, what would happen if we just did a whole lot more evangelism and we had twice the conversion rates? Surely we would grow then. No. If we had double the conversion rate, then in 2070, we would have about 700,000 members. And for perspective, right now we have about 1.7 or 1.8 million members. So these are all catastrophic declines. All of these declines involve closing at least one seminary in all likelihood, or radically re-envisioning how the seminaries operate. All of these declines imply that Concordia Publishing House may not be financially viable in the long run, or at least not in its current form. But then you might say, okay, so conversion will do it, but maybe we could double fertility. We could all just have really big families and then we'll grow. Turns out, no. If you double fertility, again, you end up in 2070 with about 700,000 people in the denomination. If you double both, you end up with just under 1 million. That's still a very severe decline. Youth retention is also a major factor. If fertility and conversion stay the same, but we're able to return youth retention rates for the LCMS kids of the 1960s, that is to around 80% or so, 80% of LCMS infant baptisms turning into confirmations. If we're able to get back to those youth retention rates, we would have about 700,000 people in 2070. As you mentioned that our youth retention rates are lower than the Roman Catholics, and they're much lower than, say, the Presbyterian Church in America. Those are the two groups I was able to get comparable statistics for. So all these things, if you change just one factor, youth retention, fertility, evangelism, whatever, you end up with about 700,000. Okay, it's better than our current projection, but it's a big decline. None of us want that. And we're still declining at that 700,000. So that's not a bottom. That's just I cut off the forecast at 2070. So is there any pathway to growth? I think is the logical question. And the answer is yes. If fertility and LCMS births and LCMS adult new membership rates and LCMS youth retention all essentially grow by about 75% over the next 10 years, then by 2070, we will be stable at around 1.2 million members. That's still a big decline, but it's at least stability.
Lyman Stone is our guest. We're talking about a new survey of Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod members in the second part of a conversation with him. When we return, what does worship style have to do with future decline? How does Jesus define the Christian's identity? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Confessing Jesus, the Heart of Being a Lutheran. This new book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or look for Confessing Jesus at our website, issuesetc.org. Confessing Jesus, the Heart of Being a Lutheran, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, 1-800-325-3040, or issuesetc.org.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and hear abortion survivor Melissa Oden, Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life, Blaze TV radio host Steve Dace, and other great speakers at the 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Bless for Life is the theme. Learn more at lutheransforlife.org/conference. And while you're there, check out Why for Life and Lutherans for Life at the January 2023 National March for Life in Washington, D.C.
You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes, he became poor.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
That you, through his poverty, might become rich.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Lyman Stone, discussing a new survey of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members. Lyman, does worship style appear to affect the projected future decline of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod?
That's a great question. So whenever I see they say these things, the inevitable response that I get is, well, you know, so what are you actually saying we should do? And the answer is, well, in this report, I'm not really saying anything. I'm saying just this is what will happen. If these quantitative relationships hold, this is what will happen. The extent to which we have an influence in people's faith is certainly theologically debatable, and it's also sociologically debatable. But one of the things many people think I'm saying is that we need to have a certain kind of worship form, that, well, if we were all just playing electric guitars, we would grow, or if we would just go back to, you know, the historic Lutheran liturgy, then we would grow. So I scraped statistics on LCMS churches from the LCMS website from 2009 to 2018 to get the weekly attendance statistics. And then I matched it to a database of LCMS churches with highly liturgical worship forms. This is from the website Lutheran Liturgy. They're tracking churches that have they really practice the historic Lutheran liturgy, so to speak, so that you can, you know, you move to a new city, you want to find one, they've got a list. So I looked, do those churches grow differently? And the answer is no. From 2009 to 2018, the highly liturgical churches declined by about 20% in their attendance. The other churches, which would include contemporary churches, but also the churches in the middle, declined also by about 20%. I don't really find any evidence that more contemporary churches or more liturgical churches have differences in church growth. The reality is people aren't leaving LCMS or coming to LCMS because of our musical style. That's just not what's driving these trends. And so when we think about what it is that's leading to membership decline, we cannot get bogged down in more worship wars. This is clearly a dividing line in our synod, and it's clearly a dividing line that has absolutely nothing to do with why churches are actually declining. There are substantive theological challenges. There are sociological challenges. There are ecclesiastical challenges. But it is not just a question of swapping out your liturgy style for one or the other.
What will the LCMS likely look like in 40 years?
That is very difficult to say. And it really depends, I think, on our answer to two questions. And there were two survey questions that I asked respondents where I said, agree or disagree, the church, the survival of the church depends on Christian families having and raising Christian children. And agree or disagree, the future of the church depends on Christians evangelizing unbelievers. You could agree or disagree with either statement. What I found is that there were some disagreements. You know, so confessional people are more likely to emphasize having children, less likely to emphasize evangelism, and missional people are more likely to emphasize evangelism, less likely to emphasize having children. Okay. But the biggest element of both groups, of confessional and missional, the biggest groups were not people who said, we should do evangelism and having kids doesn't matter, nor was it, we should have kids and evangelism doesn't matter. These are stereotypes of both groups. The most common views in the LCMS were people who said, either for the church to survive, we need to raise faithful children and proclaim the gospel to unbelievers, or the actually most numeric, the most numerically dominant group in our church was people who said, for the church to survive, we do not need to be having and raising Christian children, and we do not need to be proclaiming the gospel to unbelievers. Now, I know this might sound crazy, but I investigated this belief extensively, and I described it as non-instrumental. People who said that neither evangelism nor child rearing were essential for the church, they were the largest group in the LCMS. They were similarly common across all subgroups, so they were about 35% of both confessional and missional Lutherans. And this belief, it was not associated with people who said, oh, we really just need to trust the Holy Spirit or something. It wasn't. It was associated with basically head in the sand mentality. It was associated with people who said, oh, you know, I never really worry about the fact that the LCMS is declining numerically. It just doesn't bother me that much. It was associated with essentially a refusal to just face up to the fact that our church body is in serious and rapid decline. People who refused to accept that fact then said, we don't really need to tell people that it's important to have and raise Christian children. We don't really need to encourage people to get out and invite their neighbor to church. We don't really need to do that because there's not a crisis. So I think the future of the LCMS 40 years from now depends on which of these two major groups of the LCMS essentially wins the debate for the heart of our church. Will it be people who say, we need to be proclaiming the gospel to our children and to our unbelieving neighbors, and both of these are important and neither can be sacrificed, neither is negotiable? Or will it be people who say, decline is fine? We don't really need to belabor people with the importance of catechesis. We don't need to belabor people with the importance of evangelism. The Spirit will work how He wishes. We don't really have a role to play. This view is out there. This is the dominant view in the LCMS. It has nothing to do with Lutheran theology. It's really coming from kind of a Calvinistic view of how salvation happens. But it's the dominant view in our church numerically. And I think that we have to think about that and decide if we are in the do something caucus in the LCMS or the do nothing caucus.
Finally, with only a minute here, talk about this projected membership loss in light of the Pew Research's recent projection that overall only 46% of Americans will identify as Christians by 2070. About a minute.
Yeah, so the decline that Pew projects is about one-third as severe as the decline I'm projecting for the LCMS. There will be a society-wide decline. We are going to be facing stony ground for evangelism for the next century. That's reality. And so some decline is baked in, and we have to be realistic about that. But our projected decline for the LCMS is much more severe than what Pew is projecting for religiosity generally in the United States.
Lyman Stone is a PhD candidate in population dynamics at McGill University. He's director of research for demographic intelligence, adjunct fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, and author of What is Our Life Together? Report on the results of the Lutheran Religious Life Survey. You'll find a link to this report at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Lyman, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel on Old Testament prophet Jeremiah next. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The vast array of Christian denominations can seem overwhelming. Well, if you've ever wondered what other church bodies teach, the Lutheran Witness is here to help. In the October issue of the Lutheran Witness, we take up and study 11 other Christian denominations, a brief survey of their history, key teachings, confessional documents, and then compare that with Lutheran doctrine. Visit witness.lcms.org to learn more, or visit cph.org/witness to subscribe. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.